This is Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. In the hot seat next to me is my new co-host, Chris Mueller.
Hey, everybody. It's exciting to be with you guys. Looking forward to seeing where Trending leads us all.
Trending. What's trending this week? Flying in the air. Southwest Airline, what are you thinking?
Yeah, Southwest kicked a man and his baby off the plane, a toddler. Off a plane. And hey guys, I've got kids. I know toddlers are terrorists. It's true. But they're not actual terrorists, you know? They're just little humans, right?
I can see us getting a call from the network right now. Did you actually say that on air?
If they want to babysit, they're welcome.
Well, okay, here's the deal. I think that you and I both travel quite a bit on planes.
Yeah, I'll be. Yep.
And we have been around probably quite a few crying children on planes as well. And you know something I've noticed? They always stop at us after a couple minutes.
Yeah. You know, I've got six kids. And we are lucky enough that we've gotten to travel with them a number of times. And it is your worst nightmare when your kid starts acting up. I mean, and you're trying to do everything. You're giving them, like, candy, you know, your phone, money, you know, whatever. You know, you're just doing everything you can. And it's really wonderful. I've always run into people who kind of look back and they smile. And you can tell they're a little annoyed. But what are you going to do? It's a two-year-old. Yeah. Right? And yeah, they eventually do calm down, or mom and dad figure something out. But guys, if we don't have two-year-olds, we don't have adults. There's a whole life cycle here that we kind of need to respect. And if we stop having one, we won't have the other.
Well, and I think that we could say the same of people being impatient on airplanes, of people being impatient at church as well with children crying. And Grant, I get it. I don't have kids. I look at some kids, I think you're way too old to be crying right now. And I get it. It's annoying. But you have to stop and look. That parent doesn't want their kids screaming in church. Every now and again, I think there's some parents who really don't care. But for the most part, that parent doesn't want their kids screaming in church either, and they're going to try and remedy the situation somehow. And sometimes it just takes a second of, yeah, maybe you can't hear for a second there, whether you're on an airplane and trying to listen to your movie or trying to relax, take a nap, or maybe you're in mass. But I think that this points to the fact that we're sometimes not okay with being uncomfortable.
We're not okay with being uncomfortable or inconvenienced. Mm. So this particular situation on Southwest, the man and his two-year-old, the two-year-old was sitting in the seat next to him. He was trying to calm it down, and the person had boarded the plane and wanted to sit in their seat. The two-year-old would not vacate the seat. Now, we've dealt with this at dinner on a number of occasions where the two-year-old refuses to sit in the high chair, which no one else can sit in. But you always work through it. And by the time the steward had gotten back to the man and the child was fine. He was sitting in his dad's lap. And everything had been resolved. It was literally maybe like a couple minutes of inconvenience, and they bounced him from the plane.
Right. And the dad even said, hey, will you just try and give me a couple of minutes first to quiet her down? And they didn't. And, you know, apparently, you know, two of the stewardesses come over and people are even coming to their defense on the plane saying, no, like, they're okay. They're trying to offer compassion, sympathy. They're even taking videos because at this point, even the passengers who aren't directly involved are feeling bad thinking, hey, this isn't just that this guy's being thrown off with his kid that's already quieted down.
Right. I just think we're not around children as much anymore because there aren't as many children.
You know? Yeah, that's a good point. And it's kind of a theme for today's show. It's funny when I was looking at the show topics, how everything tied in together. And I look at this and I actually come from a generation where going to college, I actually had a lot of friends who had never held a child before, held a baby.
So weird to me.
And, you know, I grew up with a ton of cousins who had all of these children. I had young cousins, you know, and, you know, all these family members were babies always around at some point. And it's so fascinating to me. Well, actually, just on one side of the family, I do have to say. But I always had babies around. You know, I knew how to hold a baby. And it's funny because I've now had friends who's maybe siblings who are much older have had children now. It's the first child in the family in a while, and it cracks me up because I can't tell you how many times I've been corrected by people who haven't had children around on how to hold their child. And I'm like, I know how to hold a baby. The baby's not choking. Like, I'm not hanging the baby's head out. I'm actually supporting its head. I'm thinking, because they've not held children, they're overly worried about how to hold children.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a beauty of big family that you realize, A, things can get off schedule. Mm-hmm. Things can kind of be messy. And then you also learn to care for other people. You learn to be inconvenienced in a big family in a beautiful way. You know, I remember our third grader one day, our now 2-year-old, had been taking a nap, and I was out in the backyard setting up a birthday party. And she comes downstairs and she says, "Dad, you know, her little brother, his diaper was full, but don't worry, I took care of it." Right? And I said, "Wait, you've changed a poopy diaper?" She's like, "Yeah."
Was he two?
He was at the time one.
And how old was she?
She was 8.
Aww,
at the time.
Yeah.
She just helped him out and changed his diaper. And no one had to tell her because she'd seen it modeled. So she's like, "Okay, well, this is just what we do. We take care of people, you know." Right. Whereas I think the impulse on most people, even, you know, adults, if they were in a room with a child, you know, of a brother or sister and had a poopy diaper, they'd be like, they don't know, like, just take care of, like, we take care of people, even though it's inconvenient. We take, and young people and old people, you know, older people, they teach us that, you know, to care for each other is human.
Right.
Yeah. So interesting stuff on Southwest.
And just the simplicity of how things work. And I always think about this. Babies are babies. They're not always going to be calm. And to have an expectation of them to behave like a 32-year-old rather than a 2-year-old, you know, you just can't have that expectation sometimes.
You know, most of the time when I see, and I'm on planes quite a bit, when I see a child who is having a hard time, I normally just think to myself, well, they're just doing what all of us are thinking. You know?
Just, I'm on the plane. My ears hurt. There's this loud noise taking place the whole time. I'm in a confined space.
Man, last February, we were on a plane with our 2-year-old, who is not 2 at the time, is 1 at the time. And he just was like stalking the aisle. Like he just walked up that aisle for a half an hour, like, "This is my plane and I'm just not happy. And I'm just going to walk back and forth." And I thought, you know, this is just exactly how I feel. I just can't do that right now, but I'm just going to vicariously let him do that for me. That was very, you know, sort of like therapy, I thought.
And then one person thinks, how dare they allow their kid to walk around unsupervised?
Oh,
he's on,
man,
a plane. I can see him right there.
I know. Well, I was walking with him, you know.
I was with a friend just a few weeks ago, and we were at a restaurant, and her baby was getting really rambunctious. Baby's about, you know, a year old, and she finally went, "I'm just going to let her crawl right here." You know, the restaurant was somewhat calm, and she set the baby down in this huge open space. She's like, "If I just let her down for a minute or two, she'll be fine." Oh, my gosh. Two women, more mature women on the other side of the restaurant, start making the ugliest faces at us. And they're just looking. I'm going, "Oh, Michelle." She's like, I know. And then finally, she walks over, one of the women, and she goes, "I'm a grandma." And then the other one goes, "Me too." And we just, here's hand sanitizer. And she picks up the baby's hands and starts sanitizing the baby's hands. And I was just standing there. I was so mad. Thank God my friend was calm, because she responded very, "Oh, okay." And she just picked up the baby. She's like, "Okay, you ready to leave?" And we just left. But I just thought, man, like, I don't know that I would have been that calm responding to that.
Yeah, the world is a dirty place. we live in it. You know, it's funny. We have this conversation all the time. Like, well, we live in this world. You know, well, we live in this world. We live in this world.
You're going to get dirty sometimes.
Yeah, and you get a stronger immune system. I mean, within reason, of course. But yeah. You know, you mentioned little kids at Mass. And I just wanted to say this. Like, I always tell people with young kids, sit forward at Mass. It's the inclination is we always should sit in the back when we've got children because we're worried they're going to disrupt people. But think about what a 2-year-old sees at the back of Mass.
Butts.
That's it. That's all he sees. Butts. Just butts. Just rows and rows of butts. Like, it's, you know, would you want to go to that? No. Right?
Totally kind of embarrassing. But I remember when I finally got old enough, when I was younger, I used to always think, like, man, everyone's butt looks so different at Mass. And you'd see, like, some guys, and I specifically look at the men's pants. Some men really wear really fitted pants. Some men wear overly baggy pants. And I just sit there for a lot of Mass looking and comparing these different shapes of the clothing to the guy's pants. And it wasn't until you got older and you could see where you're like, oh,
hey, there's something going on up here.
And know? I'm short, too. I don't like it when tall people stand in front of me. I'm always like positioning.
Well, we don't sit in the front row because that's just crazy. And in our parish, the front rows they're open, right? Mm-hmm. So if you sit in the front row, one of my kids is going to, during the homily, is going to go have a dialogue. It's going to happen. That's the impulse right there. Anyway, we sit in the second row and then I can hold the kid and then they can see. Mm-hmm. And then I have the opportunity to teach. You know, mm-hmm. Or when the liturgy of the word is going on, I, as much as I want to just receive, I can whisper to my kids, "So that's what this means," you know, mm-hmm. And I can help teach them what's going on. As a parent, living out my vocation at Mass means teaching my kids to go to Mass.
Right.
Right. And we forget that so often. So if you're a parent of young children listening, take a risk. It's scary. But here's the other thing. like, as a church, we need to see the beauty of your family, too.
Yeah. Are you saying it's scary to sit up closer to the front?
I think it's, well, as a Catholic, I think sometimes we're scared to sit in front. We're very emergency conscious people. We always sit near the exits and aisles, just in case of an earthquake. I think that's what we're all worried about.
Well, and I think about it, too. You know, I've always been surrounded by people who love to sit in the back of Mass, you know, and I'm short. And I am really good at paying attention if I have the right circumstances. And so for me, being closer up, like every class, I sit in the front because then I can't allow myself to be distracted with my hand, to be distracted looking at other people. So it's hard for me because I'm always stuck in the back. Doesn't matter. Like, there's just been no compromise with most of the people I've always gone to Mass with, right? But I think about it for a child, they're forced to behave more when they're right there in front of the person with authority at Mass.
Yeah. And if you have to get up with your kid, then you have to get up. That's, you're not failing. You didn't mess up.
Right.
It's part of raising up a child in discipline. Like you have to go through the hard times to get to the easy times, right? And so take the chance, sit a little bit forward, let the community love you and your terrorist child.
Chris, where can people find you on social media if they want to get connected?
Yeah, you know, a great place is on Twitter. It's C. Mueller Tweets. C. Mueller Tweets. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R. And you can always find me on my website, chrismueller.co. It's not .com. It is .co.
Are you going anywhere fun to speak to any neat communities over the next couple
of
weeks?
I'll be in Idaho this week doing a parish mission. And honestly, I have no idea after that.
My sister was just saying she could never move to Idaho, even though it's beautiful, because she didn't want to be an Idahoan.
Wow.
I know.
I love it up there.
Oh, it's beautiful. Pictures, at least.
Yeah. St. George in Idaho. So can't wait to be with you guys.
Well, shout out to St. George and anyone who will be in the area. What age?
I think it's a whole parish mission.
Oh, so if you know someone in Idaho or you're nearby, you'd like to see Chris, hop on over. You can check out his website at chrismueller.co.
That's me.
In the meantime, you can tweet and interact with the show at Timory. We'll be right back. Welcome to Trending. This is Timory Millington. And as I'm sitting here looking at Facebook Live, YouTube Live, people are saying we love him to my new co-host, Chris Mueller.
Well, that is very sweet. I feel affectionate towards you as well. No, thank you. I appreciate the support. Happy to be here.
Well, you know, we're just talking about kids in Southwest, and man, like, I still can't believe, I hope people continue to tweet Southwest saying, how dare you?
Yeah, you can't kick a toddler off a plane. I mean, just people, we need kids, we need them, and I'm sorry, even if you're stuck on the plane for 4 hours and a child screams for 4 hours, which it's never going to, that is a blink in your lifetime. You will be okay.
You will be okay. However, Toys R Us may not be.
No.
Because of the lack of children, because of the lack of the desire to have children, because of abortion, because of contraception, we are living in a culture where Toys R Us is in the tank.
Gosh, that kind of hurts. Toys R Us was this magical place. I just remember they had these little parachute guys, these little rubber parachute guys that I've never been able to find again. Mm. And I would spend hours just throwing them up in the air and watching them come down and throwing them up in the air.
The ones like from Toy Story?
No, because those are a little more rigid. These were rubber. I don't even know how to describe them. They were awesome, and I've never been able to find them. Someday.
Just to think, you know, I know there are a lot of, like, smaller toy stores in different areas, but people are not going to be able to go to the giant Toys R Us anymore.
No.
And walk in and just be in Toy Wonderland, which probably isn't the best thing for your child, but...
Yeah, it's, you know, okay, so why did Toys R Us die? There's a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, Walmart was eating their lunch before Amazon started eating their lunch.
Right.
You got this tremendous leveraged buyout where they have all this kind of debt, right? You got all of that going on, but underlying it all is all of the toy stores are gone, right? There used to be, you used to have, you know, these large retailers that they're gone. There's no toy stores in the mall really anymore. None of the big chains.
Geppetto's, I think, is the only toy store I see around besides Toys R Us.
Right. And why is that? Well, we just don't have the demographics to support giant stores taking up all of that real estate for kids. Right now, I don't know if you knew this, the U.S. is at historically low birth rates, like the lowest they've ever been since we've been watching birth rates.
Right.
That's where we're at now.
We've been talking a lot about this on Trending, and man, like the impact of birth rates, you guys... It just flows into economic growth. It flows into physician-assisted suicide, the lack of young people today to care for old people. I think we talked, you know, along these same exact lines, you have places in the East where literally there are so few young people to help care for the older people that it's a whole new business now, where different countries have businesses where people are going in to clean up apartments because an old person was basically dying and rotting in these apartments all the time, because we are overpopulated, well, not in that sense, with older people, not younger people.
Yeah, I think, okay, there's a couple. Why are we having less children? I'm going to have to say part of that blame I'll put on myself as a Gen X parent, in that I think Gen X parents and baby boomers, we've made parenting into this thing where it's no longer about caring for a child and that they're growing up and that they're healthy. And then they're also, you got to do all the events and the sports. And I think, you know, these millennials and Generation Z, I guess that's the new generation, we've watched these parents just be chauffeurs and kind of caretakers more than we've seen to be parents. And you look at it and you go, I want no part of that, because it's not sustainable. And so I think on one hand, there's a pressure here where people are just saying, I don't want to deal with all that. Is it selfishness? Maybe, because we as millennials and or as baby boomers and Gen X have enabled that selfishness, because we've told these young people they're the center of reality their entire lives. So now they think about having to have someone else take that place and they don't want it.
Yeah. Because they're used to being the center of everything. You know, we talked in the last show about just the media and how, you know, we have the ability to make our picture into anything, and the self-obsession, right, in these photos, it's a result of how we have been raised. It's a result of being allowed to be obsessed with ourselves and our phones. I remember my mom used to correct me if I had a, you know, old school camera where I would set up and take a couple pictures of myself. She'd be like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
And she called me out on it. But now I see all these young people and they're getting away for hours at a time throughout the day taking photos of themselves. I'm like, thank God my mom said something to me when she saw me taking a couple selfies when I was like 13. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think we had mirrors in our rooms. And it sounds a little weird, but I don't remember having a mirror in my room. I remember my mom saying something about that years later, going, yeah, I just didn't want you guys to spend all your time looking in the mirror. So yeah, you check the way you look on the way out, but it wasn't like no one was going to obsess about how they looked. Mm-hmm. We weren't going to be in there for hours studying every pore on your face. Yeah, and that's kind of the reality we're in right now, right? Everybody knows every single pore on their face.
Right. I remember in college, actually, I decided for Lent to give up mirrors. Because I would see just how, like, man, just looking in the reflection, walking by the store, like, you see so many of us women today, we're constantly looking at ourselves. And I just recognize that's not healthy. Even growing up dancing, you know, you always would dance in front of a mirror. You wanted to have the spot on the bar so that you could see yourself in the mirror. And I think, well, yes, part of it is for self-correction, but two, part of it is actual self-obsession. And now, you know, being an older dancer who has a good background and coming back in to dance again, I see these people just staring at themselves. I'm recognizing they're not correcting themselves. They're actually just admiring themselves or overly criticizing.
Yeah.
And there's that balance. And for me, you know, when I gave up that mirror for Lent, it had a huge impact on, oh, like, I actually don't enjoy looking at the mirror and I really don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that idea of looking at yourself. You know, most of the time when we look in the mirror, what we don't see the image and likeness of God reflected back at us.
Right.
We
right.
see the litany of I'm not. Reflected back at us. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not big enough. I'm not strong enough. This is the guys, you know, for girls, I'm not skinny enough. I'm not this enough, whatever the litany of I'm not is, when God is saying, I made you in my image and likeness to reflect my glory. I put my Holy Spirit inside of you so that when you enter a room, you bring the kingdom with you.
Right.
Gosh, and again, you know, I don't think anything's encouraging that in our culture. You know, I as a parent, I have to be a little bit convicted by this declining birth rate thing. And again, obviously I'm doing my part, people. I got six kids. But am I role modeling the joy of that to my children, or are they watching me and my wife burn ourselves out as we drive them to all the activities,
yeah.
keeping up with everybody else? You know, and I say this to my wife, and we talk about this all the time. Like, we gave our kids this tremendous gift of children. We don't need to run around and compensate for the lack of siblings that most everybody else has to.
Right.
Right. You know, like, why do they need to be in all these activities? Well, because they don't have kids at home to play with. Well, my kids have kids at home to play with.
Right.
Right. But yet we still kind of end up on that wheel.
Right. And I think that most of the time those kids, you know, as long as you are putting effort into and they don't turn around and go, well, hey, we didn't have the opportunity to do this, that, or the other thing. I think some have had those experiences where they've struggled in big families.
Yeah.
But most of the time, they've ended up becoming the very charitable, kind, thoughtful individuals that really influence others.
Yeah. There's this meme going around right now that's talking about parenting. And it shows it's a speaker and she's got the screen behind her. On it says, you know, modern parenting. And it goes like, you know, the child's welfare and their education and their athletics and all these different things that you have to do as a parent in modern times. And then it says pretty much any other time in human history, feed them sometimes. Right. And it's what has parenting become? It's changed. Like our idea of what parenting is. People used to say you had a big family so they could help you on the farm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we say, oh no, it's our job to enrich these kids' lives, not that they should be contributing to the family.
Right.
I think we need to kind of start getting back on track of that. Or we're going to see these birth rates continue to decline.
It's funny you say that because I was watching a show. There's a show that I love. It's called Heartland. It's on Netflix. It is amazing and total clean show. But on the last episode that I was watching, there was the grandfather of the house. They've got a big, you know, plot of land, farm, ranch. And they have a neighbor who always comes and works on the property. And, you know, as some of the family members are gone, they're looking at her going, hey, you're going to take care of this while we're away. And he's looking at her and she's probably in, you know, high school and he's adding a ton more responsibility. And she starts complaining, I'm not appreciated. And he goes, no, you're going to be thankful for the additional responsibility.
Right.
And isn't that true? Like the idea that this responsibility is part of who we are as people, that responsibility for things when we're younger and chores teaches us to be responsible for people ultimately later on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a parent, your job should be to get your kids to the point that when they leave your house, they leave as adults.
Right.
You know, they don't leave as these kind of extended adolescents. Now, I heard on a podcast last week, someone was talking about chores, right? And you give your kids chores. He says, who wants to do chores? They have duties, right? Because everyone in a home has duties. They have things that they do that are that for the well-being of the home. What if we took that approach with our kids and said, we're not making you do labor. It's a duty. You know, this is your duty, like as a husband, I have duties, right? And why don't we give that to our kids so they learn the joy of the responsibility too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Serving others and how important, like just keeping a bathroom clean. That is a helpful and just thoughtful toward other people.
Or they learn what happens when you have a disgusting mess of a room.
Right.
Right. You know, you kind of learn how that, you know, you learn the cause and effect of those things. Well, then you can't find your PE clothes. Right.
Right.
And then you get marked down in your grade and then you get in trouble. And so you learn all that. But as parents were busy being their maids, they never learned that.
Well, and man, was that hard in college because I had a lot of roommates who were just, they were always taught, hey, like what you're doing, your activities come first. So then they show up in college, you have a nice big apartment, 6-7 girls, and they think what I'm doing comes first, not, you know, the environment I'm doing it in. Man, it makes life really difficult on all the other people that are supposed to take care of you.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you had a maid kind of walking around following you your whole life,
right,
you never learn a lesson.
Never learn a lesson. Well, this is Trending. That is Chris Mueller. This is Timory Millington. If you would like to interact with the show, you can check us out on Facebook Live and YouTube or at C Mueller Tweets on Twitter or at Timory. That's TimMmerie. That is Chris Mueller. This is Timory Millington, and we are trending.
Well, yeah, I hope so. And if we're not, follow us on iTunes and subscribe so we can end up more trending.
Or iHeartRadio, or check out what we're discussing this week throughout the week on Twitter. You can see some of the topics, thoughts, interaction. You can find me at Timory and Chris at
C Mueller Tweets.
C Mueller Tweets. That was
Twitter.
A deer in headlights moment.
I did. I was looking at my notes. I apologize, radio.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of looking at things, I'm sitting here looking at Facebook Live. Anyone who's listening in the car, you can actually go on and see what these crazy hosts look like. Of course, joining us on social media, you can find Chris Mueller, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and me at Timory. But we are on Facebook Live and YouTube Live in studio each week. And one of the comments is talking about kids and how, you know, basically there are all of these different kids and we have all these organized activities and how critical, essentially, free play is for children.
Yeah.
I think this is so important.
Yeah, my kids have this running world, sword knights. It sounds so silly, but like when our 13-year-old now, when he was little, he created this world of sword knights. And as the kids have grown up, they've all taken their place. They play with their cousins. It all happens in this land of imagination. That doesn't happen if you don't have time to sit in your room and be bored, right? You have to be looking for something to do to create an imaginary world. You have to, you know, and so, you know, I think we overschedule kids and we're losing all of that creativity. We're losing that self-starting, where a kid will see a problem and go, oh, I can fix this, right? You know, because we're so busy fixing things for them that if no one fixes it, they go, well, someone needs to fix this. We need to raise kids who are going to say, I can fix this. I know how to do this. I've taken chances. All of those good things. You know, boredom is important to the human condition. I don't know. I am 100% with you, person who commented on Facebook.
Well, I remember my little brother was one of the best people at getting bored. Man, if he was bored, he would get so annoyed. But I can also look back and go, he's someone who has one of the most creative imaginations. And today, how that's led to critical thinking and just thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
It is amazing. And, you know, I think about, man, a pencil for him was his sword and your finger was the other side of that sword, right? And like, yeah, just how we create this world and we become innovators in so many ways, innovators of thought, innovators of things. More aware of things. When we're disconnected from things, we're more aware of people.
Right. And, you know, you get bored, you read a book. Well, then you're encountering these new ideas, right? And how do those ideas come into contact with what you thought about things? You know, and how does that change your perspective? How does that change the way you think about yourself and the world you're living into? You know, if we don't give ourselves that time, we're never going to have that. You know, I work with my kids all the time. You know, you get X amount of time on video games. That's all you get. Well, I'm bored. I got nothing to do. I said, well, should I throw away your toys? You know, I mean, because they're all up there, you know, do we not have any books? We have a whole library of books. Well, you know, go read a book.
Right.
You know, I've read them all. Well, then find one you haven't read that on one of my books, you know, or, you know, so.
You've graduated, more books to read.
Absolutely.
Look at this library.
Absolutely.
Vatican II, oh, you enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. It's right there for you.
Well, you know, this is why we're talking about it, because Toys R Us is tanking, and their own statement that they release is attributing this to the decrease in birth rates. They go on, our revenues are dependent on birth rates in countries where we operate. They later go on to say, you know, this is in part due to the birth rate, but also you can see this as a result of education and income levels increasing. This has impacted how the birth rate has taken place. They also say a continued and significant decline in the number of newborn babies and children. So it's not Tim Ray sitting here saying, hey, people aren't having babies, so Toys R Us is closing down, but it's actually Toys R Us recognizing it. And man, it really stood out to me when they know the population age change and the fact that education and income levels have increased. Have we correlated education, income levels increasing with the fact that we turn to ourselves more and we turn away from children?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pure progress for the sake of progress.
Well, you know, again, and we're coming out of a weird, you know, economic time with the Great Recession and whatnot. But what we are seeing is that people are getting married later and later. And if you compare this generation, you know, to the generation, like the, you know, the greatest generation, right? They were married in their early 20s, mm-hmm. late teens. You know, now today we're not getting married until our early to mid 30s. And so that's going to have a huge effect on population. And so education correlates, because if you paid the hundreds of thousand dollars for your, you know, your degree, then you've got to get that job to make that degree count. And if you don't go get a job in your field, then you feel like somehow you failed, right? And that's the pressure we put on women in particular, mm-hmm. right? That if they have kids, they're somehow a failure, mm-hmm. right? You haven't lived up to your potential if you have children is kind of the narrative our culture says. And so you got to get all those things, climb the corporate ladder, get to that. And so you get to the point where you're now in your 30s and you haven't had children yet, or you haven't gotten married, or, you know.
Or you're struggling with an infertility crisis because of years of birth control use and overstress.
Years of birth control use and sexually transmitted disease, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so now you're seeing the ability of women to actually have children is greatly diminished, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's one of the stories we talked about that we're going to talk about this week, is that women say, oh, I want to have, you know, my 2.75 children. And they get to the point and they realize, no, I can't have those children because there's just not time left on the clock. to have those children.
I mean, I think they're showing the difference in the number of children. We're having like 1.4, I think, if you look at it, 1.8. So they say they want 2.7. We're having 1.8. We're not even replacing ourselves.
Right.
I think to be at a healthy balance, you have to be in the mid to high three, or right. I think mid threes. And so you look at this and, you know, you guys, when we do not have children, we do not have a future. When women are taught that the only thing you do is you go to university and you get that job, they are then stuck in the midst of student loans. They're stuck in the desire of, oh, hey, I have this education, but now I'm not going to use it. Well, actually, raising human beings really does put that education to use. I'm just going to say that there.
Yeah, I can speak to that in our household. My son does fairly well in his math courses, and it is absolutely his mother. Because she's sharp as a tack, and, you know, I think there's something really terrible that has come in with, you know, the women's liberation movement. And again, I think, like I said, my wife is one of the strongest, smartest people I know. But what we've done is we've said there's something that is unique and valuable about being a woman, that your ability to bear children. And we've said that has no value anymore. Right. That is the least valuable attribute of womanhood. And if woman really wants to be fully realized, she has to be essentially just the same as a man in every way. And so that distinctly unique, beautiful gift of fertility, we're going to put that off to the side because you can't really be a fully realized woman until you overcome that. And it's just, right. I just don't think that's feminism.
Right. Well, and you look at so many women, I see it firsthand, these women who go, I want children, but I got this career, so I'm choosing to, you know, not get married, wait until later. And then they actually do want to have children. But then the children, they're, because they have the student loans, because they've chosen to have this certain type of lifestyle requiring a certain type of income, they're now married to their job. And they're like constantly, I feel guilty. I feel like I'm a bad mom because they're saying it. I'm sending my kid to daycare and I'm not with them. And yeah. Then they're upset because maybe they're trying to work extra hours on certain days that they have other days off. And it's just like the whole circle goes around of the children suffer, you suffer, are women really happy? And, you know, kind of throwing this into the mix, Chris, you mentioned this infertility crisis. It truly is an infertility crisis. Like you said, you know, women are saying that they want 2.7 children and they're really having 1.8. Not only that, you know, that's what we see with millennials, but what's happened since 2008 in the Great Recession, we have seen a 16% decline in birth rates. A 16% decline. You guys, that is huge.
Yeah. And again, the other side of that is we're living longer and there is no one to care for. No, and, you know, care for elderly people in a very hands-on care for them way. But also we have, you know, social programs that depend on a tax base, right? Mm-hmm. That depend on a certain amount of people going out and earning money, having jobs, mm-hmm. and we're not replacing those jobs. And so you have this tidal wave of, you know, how do we care for our aging population when we have no children?
Mm.
And it is a real problem with no real easy answer.
Well, and think about all the people 50, 60 years from now who are, you know, in their childbearing years who aren't having children. Who's going to take care of them later on? Where will their siblings be that don't exist or that were killed through abortion or through, you know, early abortion, through abortifacients and contraception? You know, where will the people be then? There will be a very many people who are lonely. And I have to tell you, apart from a deep faith, they're going to struggle through those years. And that's why I think the new evangelization and constantly building those friendships, lifelong friendships, and remaining with people is so important right now. Because you guys, we are living in a time where people do not have siblings and they do not have children.
Yeah. Gosh, it sounds so bleak. I mean, the reality is, I think, no one's guaranteed a child. No one's guaranteed marriage. We're all supposed to be going out and asking the Lord, what's my vocation? Mm-hmm. What's your call for my life? And if you know that God's calling you to married life, then pursue your vocation, right?
Don't obsess over it, because I know there are a lot of people struggling right now who do want to marry.
Right, but pursue it.
Pursue it. Yeah.
Right? And I think most of us pursue our occupation and put our vocation on the side.
Right. Well, and that's where, you know, going out and dating. You know, we did a show on this just, was it 2 weeks ago?
Right.
Dating and just being open to those short 45-minute dates or recon missions, just coffee, nothing overly, you know, pushy. You know, A-frame hug. Again, I learned that on air. I'm not the only person who didn't know what that was, by the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, entering into this realm of, like you said just a second ago, turning away from that occupation, that career first, and putting actually your development as a person for us women with the potential to have children.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because I talk to young couples who are getting married, right? And so they're in the child rearing years, and they go, oh, no, we're going to wait a couple of years to have kids. Why? Well, we want to get all these things in order. And I'm always kind of like, well, why? The kid's just going to mess up the order. I mean, that's what they do. And that's a beautiful thing, right? Like, you know, you're never going to be ready, right?
Right.
So jump in and invite the Lord into that.
We'll be right back on Trending.
Hey, welcome back to Trending. My name is Chris Mueller. I am here with Timory Millington. We're talking about the fact that we're just not having as many kids as we have. And a lot of times what seems to be happening is women are saying they want to have kids, but they're not having as many kids as they thought they were going to.
Right. And I keep looking at this and I look, you know, this is a feminist issue, right? This is, you know, touching directly on feminism and the anger within feminism today. And I also think the anger on the side of people who say, I don't want to be a feminist because I don't want to identify with that. And I look back to the early feminists, women who were saying, hey, we need to be involved in political life. We need the right to vote because we have an experience different from men that we need to share. And I keep reflecting, Chris, on these differences, and I keep thinking about women and how women, part of the thing as women is we have this natural inward reflection. And what happens in that inward reflection is it challenges our own morality, right? It sometimes looks at our own beauty, right? Our own goodness, our own physical beauty, internal beauty. And then it ultimately leads us to see people because we've come to discover ourselves. We've kind of, you know, and I think on the downside, we can become overly obsessed with ourselves or overly obsessed with other people and what's happening. But ultimately, that inward turn that women have is what makes women so incredibly moral, incredibly attentive to other individuals. And that's actually even just built into our body, right? The anatomy of the body and the differences between the extroversion of the male and the internal organs of the woman.
Yeah. You know, I think you look back at the history of feminism and it's saying women's voices matter, right? Women's voices matter. And I think in what that's become in our modern context somehow is that there's no difference between women's voices and men's voices. Mm-hmm. And so now, in essence, what we're doing is we've lost women's voices. Yeah. Because we've said women's voices are men's voices and men's voices are women's voices. And we've lost the beauty of the complementarity of men and women.
Absolutely. And that complementarity that, again, the complement balances life out. And right now, there's not a balance with regard to family. There's a crisis of family. Pope Paul VI, if you even read in his documents prior to Humana Vitae, where he talks about the crisis of the family. He talks about, you know, this need to turn to the Blessed Virgin Mary for prayer because of her intercession and especially for the family. You know, and I look at it, man, Chris, this vile tweet that came out this past week is because of the loss of femininity. We have become so out of touch that women are killing children. Women are abortionists today. Women who are choosing to be doctors in such an honorable and giving profession are now taking with that very profession that they began to seek out. There's this abortionist, Leah Torres, who she wrote on Facebook because people were kind of criticizing the fact that she performs abortions and basically asked her if she hears the screams of the babies that are aborted. And she says this, essentially, she goes, you know, fetuses can't scream, right? And she goes on to say the reason why is one of the first things that she does is she cuts that vocal cord.
Yeah, I just have such a hard time talking about this story.
But you should.
Oh, I know. It's just, it's so horrifying to think. And again, I hold our infant in my arms and, you know, what separates him from a child that could be aborted to a child that couldn't is ours.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's just hours out of the womb. And to say that she she cuts the vocal cords so she can't hear them scream. I just don't know how you can get more evil than that.
It's wicked, and I think that, like, Chris, you know, when you're saying that, reminds me, anytime I hold a baby, especially having worked in the crisis pregnancy centers, you'll just look and you'll hold that baby, whether it's a family member or one of those crisis pregnancy babies that almost didn't make it, and you just cry thinking, what if this baby was aborted? I remember being with some friends a while back, and the grandfather was holding the baby and said, oh my gosh, I can't imagine if your mom aborted you. And he kind of says it out loud, and all of, like, kind of the family members are there, and they get mad at him for saying that. But he was right. Like, women have the ability to do so. And when we are able to have such a beauty to who we are, we've turned away from that to callously talking on Twitter about cutting the baby's vocal cords as we murder them.
Yeah. Again, you know, that dignity of the human person is just lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's amazing how the argument has changed. You know, it used to be, you know, rare, safe and legal, right? Or is what the pro-abortion groups would say. Now it's, I cut the vocal cords so I won't hear him scream.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the admission is, it's murder, but that doesn't matter because that life has no value,
right?
Because it inconveniences my life.
But, you know, at the same time as we're seeing the horror and the bluntness of women like this abortionist, you're seeing examples of this man who just donated $3 million in value housing development to help house women who are in crisis pregnancy. I guess he heard on radio, I'm going to guess maybe Catholic radio even, that there were these women that every year, 100 pregnant women that need housing. And so he donated it, and through a pregnancy pathways program, he has now made it possible for more housing for women who are choosing to have their children. And you see these examples. You see the crisis pregnancy centers, Chris. And while there's a horror of people saying things like that on Twitter, there is the joy of life coming forth, even in the midst of difficult circumstances.
Yeah, you talk about pro-life. I mean, what a pro-life action, right? And, you know, as we're on the radio today, there's how many people are listening to this who maybe have the means to do something like this in their community,
right?
You know, and if you're listening and God just convicted your heart a little bit, and you're thinking of that property that you've devalued to the point now that you can't write it off anymore, and you're thinking about what you can do with it, why not look at a donation to a crisis pregnancy center to say, I'm going to take this really strong pro-life action to say that I want not only to say that women should have these children, but that I'm going to give them a home so that they can have these children in a safe place, in a place where they know that they have, you know, a place to sleep and a place to eat. And, it just how incredible, you know, God bless this man.
And people don't understand the impact of this housing and what it has. You know, I actually, my first pro-life experience was my parents opened up a maternity home when I was just a couple years old. I was an only child, and the person who was supposed to be running it wasn't able to rent it after all, and so my parents temporarily shut up our home, and I, as a young child, was there around moms who came from the drug cartel, who came from fatherless homes, who came from, you know, just circumstances where their parents maybe weren't supportive of them having a child. And I saw these babies, and I could name these names of these children. And you can't say that those lives don't matter. What if he could only offer a house that housed 5 women and their children?
Oh, it would make a huge difference.
The impact on our culture is incredible. And, you know, I just continue to say we have to do what we can. I look to Ireland right now and this whole Save the Eighth movement. You know, I have a lot of friends in Ireland, and some of whom were family members of the founders of Youth Defense, which is an organization back in the 90s when they were trying to legalize abortion in Ireland. 7 young people stood up and said, absolutely not. They mobilized the troops. They got literature out there. They started walking the streets. They started creating rallies. Well, over 20 years later, here they are in the streets again, fighting to prevent abortion from being legalized through the first 3 months of a woman's pregnancy. And you know what's amazing, Chris? They already don't have abortion in most of Ireland, but you know what they do? Places that refer for abortions, they go out there and sidewalk counsel because they could be referred to other European countries nearby.
Yeah. You know, God bless Ireland. And I think we as American Catholics need to be praying for Ireland, that Ireland stays abortion free. They had this rally, this Save the Eighth rally. 100,000 people showed up at this rally. And, you know, I think in an American context, I go, 100,000 people is not that much. And we have like 1 million at the March for Life, right?
Right.
But when you look at it percentage wise, that is 2% of the total population of Ireland.
Right. Look at the size of Ireland in comparison to the size of half of the United States even.
Just to give you a sense of that, if a million people show up for the March for Life in D.C., which happens regularly, that's 0.3% of the population of the United States. This is 2% of the entire population of Ireland. It is a huge number. What's that showing you is that Ireland doesn't want abortion.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, this is being pushed. I hate to say it. This is being pushed on Ireland by U.S. groups a lot of times.
When I look at the heroes of the pro-life movement in Ireland right now, Charlie Fien, who's a young woman with Down syndrome, and she actually has become a little bit of a friend on Twitter the last couple weeks because I'm so proud of her. She's going before Congress. She's going before the U.N. And here's a young woman who's saying, my Down syndrome doesn't define me. Right. And not only that, I am now an activist speaking up for the majority of children that are aborted in my case, but look at me in my life. She is just, I'm so proud of her. You guys, I'm tweeting out to her. You'll see her tweets if you check them out, but what she's doing is so important. We need to pray for courage and for the Holy Spirit to be on her tongue as she is speaking up for life.
Yeah, and this is, again, this is this idea, you know, there's a story a while back, and I think it was Greenland, they're saying it was eradicating Down syndrome. They weren't eradicating, they were killing Down syndrome children. You know, and mass, this young woman saying, I love my life.
Right.
Like, I'm not lost. I'm not hurt. I love my life. My friends who have Down syndrome love their life. They have equal dignity to people who don't have Down syndrome. We need to start accepting and embracing that.
Right. That's Chris Mueller. This is Timory Millington. There's so much hope for the pro-life movement and for you. Just speak up, say something, even just share this podcast. We'll be back next week.